Is this thing on? Word.
This is the Rookie Sports Report, hosted by Matthew Frizzell.
4 runs off the Detroit Tigers, who are the 10th worst in all of baseball.
And Logan Weber.
But this man was swallowed whole by a whale.
Presented by 96.9, 99.9, and AM 1060, ESPN, The Jock.
Everybody love everybody! Come on!
Is this thing on? Are we still podcasting? Are we even podcasters? Because we have not done this, Mr. Weber, since November the 11th. Veterans Day. It's almost been a full month as we now record here. We're recording it actually a day beforehand. We're recording it here on this Thursday, but this is going to be uploaded on Friday to the Rookie Sports Report podcast. We're, of course, presented by ESPN The Jock. You'll find our links on The Jock Twitter and Facebook pages. And, of course, however you listen to your podcast, via Spotify, Apple iTunes Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Anchor, however you listen to your podcast is where we are. And it's been a while. It's been the holidays. We've been busy boys because, you know, the youngest ones always get the most work at around this time of the year. Seems like we're either hosting sports talk or you're doing stuff for KWTO, our sister station, or if we're not that, we're just terrible human beings. We just get sick, or we just say, I didn't get this amount of much of sleep or whatever. I feel like, you know, doo-doo. Let's just not do the podcast. And rightfully so. But here we are. We're fresh. We're energized. And really, Logan, I'm excited to be back here on the podcast with you, coming off a very, very nice show. I don't mean to toot our own horns or whatever, but we hosted Sports Talk last Wednesday and had a lot of caller interest, a lot of callers calling into our show. Of course, we talked college football playoff. We talked about the MLB CBA on the verge of expiring, which that has expired. We'll talk about that here in a minute. But I thought overall we had a fantastic show on the hump day yesterday, on the first day as well of December of 2021.
Yeah, it was a quality show. I mean, like you said, not to toot our own horn or anything, but I have never been a part of a show that had that many callers. I mean, it was pretty remarkable to see the number of callers we had. I mean, we had a session, a point in time there where we did, you know, we had a 25-minute segment there in the second half of the hour where all we did, it was about 25 minutes, where all we did was take callers and answer their questions. I mean, I believe our producer, Abby Linton, who produces Sports Talk almost every day, informed us that, you know, she said at one point there were 5 callers on the line that were just waiting, you know, to talk to us, and they were new callers. I mean, we had newer callers that
new
calling
names,
into the show,
yeah.
New names, younger names, you know, and that sort of, I guess, comes with the territory of being younger, you know, viewers, younger people that are a part of the show, or I guess not younger viewers, younger hosts.
Yeah.
As a part of the show, you're going to maybe bring in a newer listenership. And that's exactly what happened. But it was a ton of fun. And we talked about a lot of topics during the course of that day.
I felt kind of bad because you spent the time and diligence to write down like a total show sheet for what we were going to do. And in that 520 segment, we were going to talk about probably like Missouri State basketball. And that entire 520 to 545 segment was just dedicated to callers. And even after that, we still had a couple callers call us out before the end of our show. So really a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, of course, last night. Very enjoyable as well. Afterwards, I did a couple of broadcasts. My first high school broadcast of the season, did some Willard basketball in their annual classic tournament and had fun there. You know what's not fun?
What's that?
Whenever you get locked out, whether it be your car, your house, your business, or even if you're in Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball has implemented a lockout after their CBA expired last morning, on Thursday morning at 12:01 a.m. And it's pretty funny. I follow ESPN baseball reporter Jeff Passan on Twitter, and of course he kind of broke all the news. But what I found funny about it, they were negotiating with the CBA yesterday, like a last-minute negotiation for any kind of way to avoid the lockout. The lockout lasted longer. Actually, it didn't last long at all. A total of 7 minutes did the discussion last between the Players Association and Major League Baseball. And afterwards, the owner said, the hell with this. Let's stop. baseball right now, as of December the 2nd or 3rd, whenever you're listening to this podcast, has stopped. It is on pause, and it's something that I do not want to see. Obviously, this is the first time we have seen, you and me especially, this is the first time we have seen anything like this, but this is not the first time that Major League Baseball has seen this. I believe this is now the 7th time in history in which it's gone into a lockout, and the 4th time since 1972, and the last time, of course, was in the 1994 player strike. And, you know, Logan, it's kind of pushing the limits of any publicity is good publicity, but baseball has lost a lot of viewership in the past with it not being as, say, entertaining as, say, like football, basketball, or what have you. Well, now that you have multi-millionaires arguing with other multi-millionaires, I'm talking about Major League Baseball owners and their players, when you have people arguing like that, yeah, you'll get some publicity in the fact that you're going on strike, baseball has stopped, but you're also going to lose a lot of fans because you and I were just regular everyday Joes working for minimum to just above it, thinking, you guys are making 6, 7, even 8 figures a year. You have no right to be arguing about what major salary implications you need and what have you.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, it's, you know, and we, I think we all knew this was coming. You know, the writing was on the wall. This is something that there's been so much turmoil in the last 4 or 5 years between the players and the owners. You know, the owners want to keep as much of that money in their pockets as they can. And professional sports athletes and just, you know, people in general, I guess you could say over the last 10 years, are really starting to take ownership over their own lives. And these professional athletes specifically, they understand what their value is.
Right.
You know, they understand that without them, these owners aren't making the kind of money they're making. Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, the MLB, they're not making the money that they are. These guys are as famous, if not more famous, at certain levels, you know. These guys aren't allowed to walk down the street and just be normal people. They can't. They're celebrities in every sense of the word. They are as much of a draw in terms of their fame as a movie star or a famous singer or rapper, you know, as the president of the United States in some instances. They are that. Their name, their image is that recognizable in our society today. And a lot of that comes with social media, which, you know, has its pros, has its cons. Well, one of the pros of what we've seen from the social media age and this explosion of the internet and television and just media in general has allowed these players to recognize just how much they're worth and that they can take a stand and say, you know what? No, we deserve to be treated with the respect that we have earned and the dignity that has been bestowed upon us by being high-profile athletes, high-profile people in the United States today and around the world. Because, you know, baseball is not a sport that is just played here in the United States, okay? It's not like football where it's just here in the States, okay? You know, some of the best players we've seen in the history of Major League Baseball. This sport is international. You know, Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, you know, further south into South America and things like that. You're getting a lot of players from there. It's getting over into Asia now. You know, we've Ichiro Suzuki. Now we've got Shohei Ohtani, you know, and many more athletes in terms of the Asian theater, whether it's China, Japan, you know, North or South Korea. You're getting a lot of players from around the world playing this game. It's much, it can be more equally described to, closely described, I should say, to the NBA than the NFL. Because in the NFL, it's basically 99.9% guys who were born and raised in the United States. Okay, the NBA, and the NBA is definitely, you know, 75%, I guess you could say, maybe 65% guys that are born in the United States. But there's people from all over the planet playing that, playing the game of basketball and playing it at the highest level in the NBA, you know? The MVP of the league last year, Nikola Jokic, is from Serbia. You know, Luka Doncic, not from the United States. Kristaps Porzingis, you know, the list goes on and on. Joel Embiid. You know, so these guys are understanding that with their social media following and all of the things that they're able to put together, they're famous people. You know, they are celebrities, A and B list celebrities.
Right.
That's what they are. And understanding that we can take a little bit more control of our lives than maybe in years past. Even in the last 15 years, you know, guys couldn't do this.
Sure.
But in the last 5 years, among all professional sports, guys are understanding that with their followings, whether it be social media, on television, radio, whatever medium they use, that they are a vital part of the sport that they play. Not just because of their performance on the field or on the court or on the ice, whatever it is, but the way that they have their way that their following caters to them off of their respective, you know, sports, I guess you could say, surface. So for them to put their foot down and say, no, we're not just going to go quietly into that good night, a la Scott Frost, or Scott Frost, the head coach of Nebraska. Robert Frost.
Yeah.
So for them to put their foot down, absolutely. They have every right to do so, and so do the owners, but I really, really have a lot of respect for what the players are able to put out right now and say that, you know, there's some things we want to get done that the owners are going to have to listen to. They really are. Because the ownership, yeah, while they have, you know, they have the money and they have some power in that, they get nothing if the players don't perform. They get nothing if the players don't play. And the players understand that. They understand the leverage that they have, and they're going to use it just like the owners are. But I believe the players certainly are more in the right as of this moment than the owners are. That's just my opinion.
And I think, and I'm agree with you to some extent on that, I'm not a huge fan, and we've kind of talked about this prior, the control that these players have, or that these owners have, these ball clubs have over players. A guy that I look at, of course, first name that should come up is former Cubs third baseman Chris Bryant. There had always been this mantra, and it's a way of reworking the system. I hope the system gets somewhat fixed in this new CBA, but you could have guys who are performing at MVP kind of levels, guys that are worthy of, say, the $10 by $300 million contracts, whatever the mega deals that these big free agents are signing. They wouldn't be eligible for that for another 6 years. That's not right. I understand both sides of it. I understand why players would be upset by it, but I understand as a franchise, you're thinking, okay, we're not a big market team like the Chicago Cubs. They're not exactly a big market as, say, you know, the New York Yankees or the Los Angeles Dodgers. They could not be able to sign him immediately whenever he had the success he had. So they had to use that window of him in that area for as long as they could. And it's a really, I don't know, the arbitration process is really weird to me.
And you can
avoid it when you sign extensions. Like, I'm not saying the players are just stuck there for 6 years. They can, of course, ask for trades. And if they want to, they can get an extension from teams. We just saw a few weeks ago, Wander Franco, the top prospect for the Tampa Bay Rays. He got a multi-year extension with the Tampa Bay Rays. He's going to be there for a while. But the arbitration process, I think, is really something that's going to be a big forefront, a big key to tweak in this new CBA.
Yeah, and that's Rob Manfred said in a press conference at the Texas Rangers ballpark after the, you know, after the negotiations faltered. Listen to this sentence. Okay, when talking about salary arbitration, and the MLB Players Association now wants to, is proposing that starting in the 2023-2024 offseason, that it changes to 6 years or 5 years of MLB service, or an age of 30.5 down to eventually 29.5. Okay, I believe salary arbitration is an issue in and of itself, and I understand, you know, Manfred says that that's going to damage small market teams. Yeah, it will. It absolutely will. You know how you combat that?
Have a salary cap.
Have a freaking salary cap. I am so beyond done with the, no, we don't need a salary cap in Major League Baseball. Yes, you do. Every other sport on the planet that plays it professionally has a salary cap. Even the college level has some semblance of a salary cap with, you know, everybody has a set number of scholarships at every level. Unless, you know, public versus private's a little bit different and things like that. But every school in Power 5 college football, whether it's the ACC, the Big Ten, they all have the same set number of scholarships. The same number of budget for recruiting. It's all the same. It levels the playing field a little bit. And yes, bigger teams, bigger markets are going to rise to the top regardless. But it levels the playing field out. And it allows teams, you know, if it wasn't that way, if it was one of those situations where, you know, Alabama got 60 scholarships and Cincinnati got 40, you may not see Cincinnati in the college football playoff discussion this year.
Indeed.
But it is level, so you allow that to happen. So to say that because of salary arbitration, it's going to hurt small market teams, it's not arbitration that's hurting it. It's the fact that there's no salary cap that's hurting it.
It's a Wild West.
It's already an unfair game. Yeah, there's already damage being done to small market teams.
Look at what the Oakland A's are going to have to do. I'll go back to the Moneyball era, of course. Of course, great movie by Brad Pitt. It's on Netflix now, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Great movie. But that's the problem with Major League Baseball. These small market teams, like, say, the Oakland A's, the Tampa Bay Rays, these small markets are just, they're at odds here. They cannot compete with guys like the New York Yankees. There was like this famous quote from Brad Pitt. There's rich teams, then there are poor teams. Then there's 50 feet of crap, and then there's us, which is the Oakland A's. And that is a problem in of itself, which has an easy solution. Like you said, a salary cap. And you can still give these guys big contracts. I'm not saying as a player association, They're not gonna outlaw the big, you know, 10-by-$300 million deals. That can still happen. But it's gonna have to come from teams that are bigger markets and those that can afford it based off of the cap. I know they talked about having a salary floor as well, of it being like $100 million. That's not gonna solve anything. Cause yeah, teams will cough up the $100 million. That or they'll have to have new owners or relocate. So, say, yeah, they cough up the $100 million. That's still not going to change the fact that the Dodgers have a payroll of over $300 million and the Rays are going to have to be kind of stuck there at that $100 to $105 million range. Baseball, Manfred, put in a salary cap.
It's not
rocket science. Every other league has a salary cap.
Right.
MLB, my correction. NBA, NHL, NFL, what insert league, they have a salary cap. Why are you different?
So here's my point. So taking a look at the five smallest markets in Major League Baseball. The five smallest markets in Major League Baseball. The Kansas City Royals, the Oakland A's, Tampa Bay Rays, the Milwaukee Brewers, and the San Diego Padres. Those are the five smallest markets in Major League Baseball. Do you want to know, combined, how many World Series championships those teams have since 1991?
Say the teams against Royals, Padres.
Royals, Padres, A's, Brewers, and the Padres, the Brewers, the Rays, the A's, and the Royals.
One.
How many World Series did those guys have in the last 30 years?
One. And that was
the Kansas City Royals in 2015. One World Series championship from the five smallest markets in this league in the last 30 years. But you take a look at some of these World Series champions and the markets that they're in, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Nationals, the Boston Red Sox, the Astros, the Cubs, the Giants, the Cardinals, the Yankees, the Phillies, the Los Angeles Angels, the Chicago White Sox, okay? So, how many World Series championships do the five biggest markets in the league have in the last 30 years? 10?
Yeah. 12, 13. I know there's the old argument, well, you can't buy championships or whatever. Yeah, to some extent, you still have to upgrow your players or whatever. But here's the thing. If you have the funds, you can sign them to extensions. You can sign them to these mega lucrative deals early on in their careers and not have to worry about them going to free agency. The Rays and A's have to pick and choose, like the small market teams, they have to pick and choose who they want to keep and who they're going to want to build around
right. In
this league. And the Royals are a perfect example of it back in the early to late 2010s. They won their World Series with the core of Kane, Hosmer, Moustakas, Escobar, and others, but they had to keep two or three certain players and not all five, in which if those five guys, say, played for the Dodgers or the Red Sox or insert team that has big markets,
right,
they could have re-signed all five and kept that core for potentially another World Series run.
Yeah, they win the World Series, and then they lose Johnny Cueto. They lose Ben Zobrist. They lose Lorenzo Cain, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, Kendrys Morales. You know, the list goes on and on and on. Alcides Escobar, it just continues to go down this list. And the guys that they were able to re-sign was Alex Gordon. Alex Gordon and Alex Gordon. That's it. You know, and they had to rebuild from, and I guess Salvador Perez. And they had to rebuild from where they were at. That's not okay. And but back to the point that I was making, Rob Manfred trying to defend the MLB's position with arbitration and try to, you know, downplay the Players Association and their demands when it comes to arbitration. He said, quote, "We already have teams in smaller markets that struggle to compete," Manfred said during a news conference at the Texas Rangers ballpark not far from the hotel where negotiations broke off. Quote, "Shortening the period of time that they can control players," pause. Whatever the rest of that sentence is, I don't care. The fact that you use the term control players means you're in the wrong. That's it. That is absolutely it. Okay, a rookie contract in professional basketball, in the NBA or in the NFL, is typically 3 to 4 years with an option. You know, not just 6 years, not just 30 years old. It doesn't work that way. You know, yeah, they have the restricted free agent scenario, but that still allows them to go sign with another team. So if a player, you know, Jason Tatum becomes a free agent, right, after his rookie deal is done in Boston, which it won't be, he's already signed an extension.
Sure, but examples, yeah.
It's the first name that pops into my head. He goes out into free agency, and he's a restricted free agent, and say Boston offers him a 4-year, $120 million deal, okay? That's a pretty good deal, $30 million a year on average. That's great. Say, let's just say, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Let's say the Clippers, for example. They go out and they offer Jason Tatum a 4-year, $160 million deal, paying him an average of $40 million a year. In order for Boston to keep Jason Tatum,
they have to match that offer.
They have to match that offer. So now the decision is up to Boston. Do we want to pay an extra $10 million a year to keep Jason Tatum? As a Celtics fan, I would have said yes. I would say yes. But that wasn't a scenario that had to happen.
Not yet, at least.
Right. And so with that, that gives that player a little bit more power in the scenario. You know, that a team, not his team, could go pay him and offer him more money. And it's like, okay, you know, I could either go to that team and get paid the money that they offered me, or I can stay where I'm at right now, but they're still going to have to pay me the money that that team offered me.
Right. Perfect example for it, I'll give you one, Julius Randle. Big, and I mean big-time player for the Los Angeles Lakers. Had great minutes, was a good four, entered that restricted free agency period. The New Orleans Pelicans offered him a contract. Lakers didn't match it.
Right, didn't match
it. Then he went to the Pelicans. And then, of course, now he's bowling with the Knicks. But, yeah, and if you're going to keep arbitration in Major League Baseball, and I'm not a proponent, and I'm not an opponent, or let me rephrase, I am an opponent of arbitration. But if you're going to still have it, make it based off of war. Make it based off a grade scale of how you performed. Because guys with wars in the threes, 3.5s, fours, guys that were very valuable players, even at times the most valuable player in your league, especially on your team, should be making more than, say, their rookie deal. So if a guy in arbitration has like a 3 to 3.5 war, that should equate to $9 to $10 million. And if you make a lower war, okay, say you have like a war of 2, you make $4 to $5 million. Make it proactive if you're still going to have that stupid arbitration in place for Manfred. And of course, like we just alluded to not 5 minutes ago, we could all easily avoid this if we just had a salary cap.
It's
frustrating.
Yeah, it is. It is the biggest, I'm trying to find the correct word here for this.
Biggest scam.
Yeah, it is the biggest manipulation in professional sports.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's a manipulation to the smaller markets in this league. You know, I would imagine after the 2015 World Series, after the 16 playoffs and all those things, after that great 3-year run that the Royals had, I could, in my eyes, and you know, you go back and you read interviews, listen to interviews from some of those guys on those great Royals teams. You listen to interviews with Hosmer and with Moustakas, Lorenzo Cain. Those guys wanted to stay in Kansas City. But because of a lack of a salary cap and how small the payroll is in a market like Kansas City, they couldn't afford it. They couldn't afford to keep those guys. As bad as they wanted to stay in Kansas City, they just couldn't afford it.
And you can take it one step further. Major League Baseball, in and of itself, would be a hell of a lot better if there was a salary cap, because these small market teams, like the Royals, like, say, the Orioles at one point, like, say, the Rays at one point, the Oakland A's at one point, they have to go through seasons where they lose 90, 100, 110 games in a 162-game season in order to get high draft picks, and hopefully they can pick the right player that they can choose to lead the franchise in arbitration, and then they have that short, and I mean very short, 2 to 5-year window to compete for a World Series. You wouldn't have that kind of problem if you had a salary cap and these small market teams, like every other big market team, can say, okay, we have these guys here. We can pick and choose who we're going to keep based off of the salary cap limit. It's obscene. It's absurd. It's obscene. It's manipulation. It's a scam. It's ugh.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And I love baseball. And the fact that this still goes on, it's terrible. I hate it. I really do.
Yeah.
I think players should get the money they deserve, and I think baseball overall should be much more competitive, not have teams that, say, win 100 games, but then, to counteract it, have 2 to 3 other teams that lose 100 games.
Right. So let's just put an example out. If there wasn't a salary cap in professional football, in the NFL, or in the NBA, look at who the most recent World Series champions are. And then look at the last year's NBA champion. Do you think the Milwaukee Bucks win the NBA Finals if there was no salary cap in the NBA?
Highly doubt it.
If you saw the Knicks and the Lakers and the Clippers and the Celtics, you know, markets like that having the biggest payrolls in the league, Giannis doesn't stay in Milwaukee. They're not able to keep Chris Middleton and bring in Drew Holiday. It's not, it wouldn't happen. The Milwaukee Bucks don't get there. The Phoenix Suns don't get there. The Kansas City Chiefs don't go to 3 straight AFC championship games, win a Super Bowl, and go to 2 Super Bowls back to back if there's no salary cap. If they didn't have the money to pay Patrick Mahomes that amount of money and keep Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and Tyrann Mathieu and Chris Jones. And now this year they wouldn't have had the money to sign Orlando Brown and trade for Orlando Brown and sign Joe Tooney. They wouldn't have had the money to do that, or had the money to trade Frank Clark and give him the deal. You know, they wouldn't have been able to afford it if there was no salary cap in the NFL. Major League Baseball is a sport in a league that is playing off of an old, broken-down system that they just refuse to change, because that is Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball is that 70-year-old man sitting at the local diner in your hometown that just refuses to accept change. That is Major League Baseball sitting at that diner with all the other professional sports leagues. The NBA, the MLB, NHL, MLS, all of those other leagues understand where we are in today's climate, both in sports, politically, everything. Major League Baseball refuses to change under this, you know, flag of America's favorite pastime.
That's gone. That is long gone.
It is long gone. And that's why you're losing TV ratings. That's why you're losing ticket sales. That's why you're losing the same recognition and popularity that Major League Baseball once had, because it's not the same anymore. You change with the times or you get left behind. And Major League Baseball right now is being left behind, and they need to figure it out. Rob Manfred needs to figure it out. For once, Rob Manfred needs to do the right thing and put a stop to this payroll versus salary cap argument, because there is no argument. Put a salary cap in place. If you're afraid that it's going to stop players from being able to make the money that they're currently making, look at the NFL. Look at the money that these guys are getting paid. Patrick Mahomes is getting paid $40 million a year minimum. Minimum.
It's insane. It's so sad to see. And I honestly think that this is going to be something in which it's going to be drawn out. I hope it isn't, But at the same time, this is Rob Manfred. This is Major League Baseball. I wouldn't put anything past it. I would not. I could see spring training being delayed, and God forbid, I hope the regular season isn't delayed. Man. That was kind of a therapy session Thursday in and of itself with how frustrated we got here on this Thursday edition. Actually, no, this is Friday, but we're recording on Thursday, yeah.
It's an easy thing to get frustrated about. And rightfully so. You should be frustrated about it if you're a sports fan. You don't even have to be a baseball fan. I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I am a fan of sports. I love sports, without a doubt. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now if I didn't.
Amen to that.
This is something to rightfully be upset for. I'm upset for the sport itself. I'm upset for the players, the managers, and those guys that put the work in every day, because the guys holding the pocketbooks just want to be greedy, and I can't stand it. I absolutely cannot stand it. The guys with the pocketbooks in the MLB offices, starting with Rob Manfred and the owners of these franchises, are just, you're in the wrong. There's no other way to say it, but you're in the wrong, and you need to get your head out of your bleep.
At least you made it FCC approved there. I'm sure you're also frustrated at the fact that the Boston Red Sox just traded one of their key contributors from their 2021 playoff team and Hunter Renfro got traded to the Milwaukee Brewers for a couple of prospects and an old name returning. Your face is so bad. You're just like, just no.
Yeah.
Hunter Renfro is traded to the Milwaukee Brewers for Jackie Bradley Jr. right before the CBA expired. And I'm sure, Logan, this is a thrilling move as a Red Sox fan that you wholly and lovely enjoy having JBJ back in a Red Sox uniform.
No, I don't. I absolutely don't. All right? Jackie Bradley Jr., yes, okay. The guy is a great defender. He is a great defender. However, he's only won one gold glove in his entire career, okay? One gold glove, and despite, yes, he is a great, he's a great fielder. He is. He's a one-time All-Star, gold glove winner. He was on the team that won the World Series in 2018. He was the ALCS MVP that year because he had, you know, one five-game stretch where he hit the ball really well. But the guy doesn't hit. He can't hit. All right? I mean, really. The number of seasons, so there have been two seasons in Jackie Bradley's entire career where he's batted above 250. That was in 2016 when he was an All-Star. He batted 267 with a 349 on base percentage. He hit 26 home runs, 87 RBIs.
Not bad.
At 26 years old, we thought, okay, this guy is going to be the next great outfielder for the Boston Red Sox. You know? That was, you know, he was sort of getting a lot more love at that point than even Mookie Betts was getting. You know, you look at it now and realize we were being idiots, Red Sox fans, being complete morons, to think that he was going to be better than Mookie Betts. But, you know, he's had two seasons where he's batted above 250. That year in 2016 where he batted 267. And then last season, during the COVID-shortened year, he batted 283 in 55 games played. You want to know how many seasons he's batted below 200 in his career?
Gosh, he's been in the league for a little bit now. I want to say random number, three?
Three. He's had two seasons where he's hit above 250 and three seasons where he's hit below 200. His first 2 years in Major League Baseball in 2013 and 2014, he hit 189 and 198 respectively. This season, in Milwaukee, in 134 games, he hit 163 with a 236 on base percentage, a 261 slugging, 6 home runs, 29 RBIs, and struck out 132 times. He had 63 hits and 132 RBIs. He struck out twice as much as he had hits. And the Red Sox thought it was going to be a great idea to trade him back versus Hunter Renfro, who hit 256 with 31 home runs and 96 RBIs this season. And he's 2 or 3 years younger than Hunter than Jackie Bradley Jr. Hunter Renfro is 29. Jackie Bradley's 31.
I love the I knew I'd bring that up, and I love the reaction to it, but I hate it as a Cardinal fan because Hunter Renfro is a dude. I feel like he is a great defender, can play all three outfield positions, has a cannon of an arm, broke in with the Padres, and really did well for San Diego. Got traded, I believe, to Boston. I don't know the exact pieces of it, but, of course, he had a good season last year being a part of that team that got him to the ALCS, so Why? Boston, why?
Yeah, he batted 259, 31 home runs, 96 RBIs. He had a 315 on-base percentage and a 501 slugging. His OPS was a .816.
Not bad.
Jackie Bradley's OPS, his OPS for this season, .497. That's not going to get it done. Jackie Bradley has a lifetime batting average of .230, Renfro a .237. Now, some of that comes with the COVID-shortened year last year in Tampa Bay. He hit .156.
But Renfro has that much of a higher batting average and also hits for more power than Jackie right. Bradley Jr. And I think the defense is honestly the same.
Right. Jackie Bradley Jr. in 9 years of MLB service has 104 home runs. In six seasons, Hunter Renfro has 128.
That's all you need to know.
So continuing on that pace, by the time Hunter Renfro was done with year nine, he could theoretically have 200 home runs when Jackie Bradley hit 109 years, and he has a higher batting average, a higher on-base percentage, a higher slugging, a higher OPS.
And the blood pressure is going higher for you at the moment, right? I see that face is getting red. Oh, man, this was fun. I missed doing this. I mean, of course, I love doing just sports talk with you, of course, and then earlier this week we did the sports reporters, but it's just good to be here, just you and me on this podcast, just shooting the bull or whatever. No breaks, no time breaks, no nothing. Just talking sports and a little bit of whatever.
A little bit of whatever.
Loved it all. I really have. Logan, always a pleasure, and hopefully if we're not sick or doing something else, we'll be back here on Monday.
Yeah, for sure. Let's look forward to it.
For Logan Weber, I'm Matthew Rizzo. This has been the Friday edition of the Ricky Sports Report Podcast. Hey, look, folks, don't let anyone tell you the odds about anything, and we'll talk to you on Monday. Have a great weekend.
Did you know a Bengal tiger can eat 50 pounds of meat per day?